Blog Talk Radio.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there is a better way to work.
Wow, that's a snazzy new jingle we've got. I do miss the Royal Mail singing their little song, but the other thing, of course, is he's just said everything that I was going to tell you. So, my name is John Ingham. I'm one of the co-hosts of the podcast show that we run within the Engage for Success movement in the UK. If you want to know more about the movement, we're on engageforsuccess.org. Lots of information about employee engagement and the movement and tools that you can use to stimulate engagement in your organisations and so on. And because we are a movement, we're very active in promoting employee engagement, promoting the movement, and one of the things that we do is this podcast show. So well done for finding us, whether you're listening live or on the archive at Blog Talk Radio, where the show is Engage for Success, or indeed if you're picking up the archive on iTunes, because we're syndicated over there these days as well. This show we're going to be talking to, so the movement, it is a business-led movement. There is a task force led by lots of leading lights in the business world. There's a practitioner group where practitioners can get together and share ideas and inputs and experiences about creating employee engagement. And there's also there's a guru group, which is filled with gurus, consultants and suppliers and so on. And we thought that one of the nice opportunities of this show at various points would be to talk to some of the gurus about what they're doing and their perspectives on employee engagement. And this is our first guru show. So, congratulations, Graham. You're our first guru.
Thank you very much. That's a great honour and a privilege.
It is, isn't it?
Breaking new ground.
Everybody, this is Graham Frost. Graham, I mean, rather than me doing an intro, because I can never do it in the same way that you will be able to, do you just want to let people know sort of who you are, what you're doing, why you're a guru, perhaps?
Well, I've never been called a guru before, so it was quite a strange moment when I joined a guru group, because I've never really thought of myself as being a guru. I just think what I actually believe in as far as the world of work and employee engagement is concerned, it's kind of common sense, really, but maybe it isn't. Maybe people don't think like I do. But no, I come from a frontline customer service background in, funnily enough, the railway industry. And I learned everything I know about customer service probably from about six people who I worked with over quite a long career in the railway industry. I did spend 20 years actually serving customers myself. So I have a lot of experience of that. And then I got offered the opportunity to go into learning and development in the 1990s. And so I had a sort of second career, which I'm still doing. Nowadays, I'm a freelance trainer, and I hate the word consultant, but that's what people tend to tell me. And I help people to improve their customer service through having more engaged employees, in a nutshell.
Ah, okay. So it all fits in that case.
It does.
Because that's obviously what we're going to talk about. I mean, engagement is such a key focus at the area, and there's so many things that we could talk about. And, particularly the Francis report at the moment, with all the focus around employee voice, we probably need to put that on a show coming up fairly soon. But, no, today we are going to be talking about employee engagement and customer satisfaction, customer service, loads of things even within that agenda we could talk about. Might get on to some of those points a bit later on. Graham, because as you were just outlining, your focus in this area is partly based upon your own personal experience. So we're going to start there. Just before you do, let me just make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with us if they would like to do so. And you've probably already found this anyway, but if you've not, we are at www.blogtalkradio.com/engage-for-success. And if you go there, and if you click on show 8, where it says Guru Interview Graham Frost, and have a look there, you will see, well, you'll see the number to dial in if you want to talk to me and Graham, but let me give you that now. It is a US number. So it's +1 347 237 4274. We are going to start just letting Graham tell his story for a little bit, and then I'll follow up with some questions. But if you'd like to throw in a question too, please do dial in. And also at that same place, so under show 8 at blogtalkradio.com/engageforsuccess, you also find a link to a back channel that we're running on Google+. In fact, we have a Google+ group called Employee Engagement. So if you go to plus.google.com and search for Employee Engagement or Engage for Success, you'll find us there as well. And we are conducting a little back channel. I don't know if you're on it, Graham, are you?
I mean, are we yes, talking, I have been you? On it, yes.
I was just wondering if we could talk around about you behind your back, but obviously not.
but
if anybody else wants to, wants to join the chat
time.
There, you can do as well. Right, that's enough faffing around from me. Graham, so let's dig a bit deeper. So, you know, where did this interest arise?
Well, in the mid-1990s, I'd been working for what was then British Rail for quite a long time, and we had the spectre of privatisation came along, and, you know, a lot of us were quite scared about the fact that, you know, things were going to change, as, you know, any type of change. What actually happened was that the particular railway company that I worked for, the new people that came along, or one particular guy came along, who was the new chief executive of the newly created privatised company. He came along and completely revolutionised customer service and got everybody on board.
Ooh.
And the first thing that we noticed was that where we'd never really been communicated with that much as British Rail employees, we were actually communicated with, and we were actually asked for our ideas, and we were asked what we thought. And this guy called Christopher Garnett, who was our chief executive, he came along and he decided that everybody in the business was going to be responsible for customer service. And he would get on trains and go and help out himself, and he expected all his managers to do that. So you would have a situation where a train might break down on York Station, where the company headquarters was, and you'd see managers and directors coming out of the headquarters offices and actually helping passengers with their luggage.
Oh. So was this before the "we're getting there" thing, or was that?
Oh, this is long after that.
This is long after that.
Yeah, that was in the late 1980s.
Me too.
So basically, what happened, John, was that, you know, basically 2,000 people who were quite worried about privatisation and thought things were going to get worse under privatisation, they actually were communicated with, their ideas were listened to, more people were actually hired to work on the front line to deliver this higher level of customer service that was expected, and people were engaged. And I can honestly say that for 3 or 4 years at least, during from about 1996 up until early in the 2000s, I used to get out of bed on a Monday morning and I couldn't wait to get to work. And that was because there was a lot of praise, there was a lot of recognition, there was a lot of basically communication. They had the whole, you know, the four enablers of employee engagement hadn't even been heard of then. In fact, the phrase employee engagement probably hadn't even been coined in 1996-97. But they actually had it going on, you know, the whole thing was, we actually had some, you know, we had a strategic narrative, we had definitely had some inspiring managers. I wouldn't say they all were, but there was certainly enough of them to create a critical mass. There was definitely employee voice, and there was some integrity about the business. You know, people actually said, you know, people walked the talk. And there was a lot of that going on, and that was kind of what, you know, I thought to myself, well, why can't all companies be like this?
Yes, because they're not.
Well, no, they're not. You know, I mean,
it is interesting because I'm sure you do the same, Graham. You know, when we talk to people who've been in your position, and now and again you find someone's had that wonderful experience back in their career, sort of 20 years ago, and you just wonder why other organisations can't do these. Because as you were saying, you know, they're not amazing rocket science, are they? They're pretty straightforward.
No, it does have to come from the top as well. You know, I really don't think you can outsource employee engagement. I don't think you can delegate it to a department. I think you know, the person at the top. And I've done quite a bit of research into companies that win the Sunday Times Best Companies Award,
yep.
And in the sort of top 10 of them, and you'll find that most of their chief executives actually don't spend a lot of time in their office. They spend a lot of time going around the business, finding out what needs to improve in order to make it a better employee and customer experience.
Mm.
I don't think you can have a great customer experience if you've got a pretty ropey employee experience. It doesn't really work.
Mm.
Why then
don't the other organisations, the ones which aren't best employers, why don't they do this?
Well, I think they're driven by, I've worked in companies that don't do it, and the only thing I can think of is that they're driven purely by financial results, and that tends to be this month's financial results, and they genuinely don't buy into the fact that you can achieve better financial results through customer service and employee engagement, and they might. Because they think it's all pink and fluffy,
yeah.
And all this behaviour stuff, and sort of recognising people and thanking people for doing a day's work. Oh well, you know, a lot of people say, well, why would I thank my team for doing a day's work? They get paid for it.
Mm.
And some people genuinely think like that.
And particularly in these hard economic times, of course, there's even more of a tendency for organisations to focus on those hard financial results. So is it, I mean, and I have my own views on this, but you know, that we're not interested in me now. So is it the organisations need to balance their focus on financial results and just understand that they need to focus on employees to support that? Do they need to, so is it sort of finance first, but they need to do employees second? Is it finances and employees the same, or are you actually suggesting they need to put employees first if you're going to get those sort of results that you've been describing?
Well, I'm wired up differently to a lot of people, John, and I honestly think that if you put your employees and your customers first, if you turn the traditional triangle upside down and you put the customers and the customer-facing people at the top and everybody else is there to support that relationship, then the actual finance will look after itself. I can tell you that during that time in the railway industry, for instance, I'd worked in the train catering on board the trains for several years before I went into the training team there. And during this, it always been agreed that the catering would never make money because it was just part of the service. But during that period, the catering did actually make money. Because the people were looked after, they were given the resources they needed largely to do, you know, to do a better job, to deliver better service, and that happened. And people spent more money. A customer spent more money with us because of the atmosphere that we created.
Absolutely. So, okay, I mean, I'm not going to be able to argue with you about that then, because I tend to agree. So that would appear to be the really big thing that organisations need to do. Then they need to put their employees first in order to kickstart these high levels of engagement we're talking about, and that works for me, particularly because you know we know that not many organisations have high employee engagement, and I don't think many put employees first as well. So you know there's a bit of a correlation going on there for me. So if that's the first thing, what would be like number two, number three, out of all of those different things that you were talking about, you know, the four enablers, praise, recognition, communication, all of those things, put the employees first. Two more things that you would suggest organisations do to get that really oomph behind their employee engagement.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things is a induction programme that everybody comes on when they join, so that they're absolutely sure about what their role is in the business before they get let loose on customers, or you know, and that goes for people that are going to work in supporting roles in offices and what have you as well. You know, everybody needs to know what the company's all about and where it's been and where it's going.
Yeah.
And, you know, that should happen on day one. I mean, I recently met somebody that was on their way back from their company induction, and they'd actually been with the company for 6 months. And I got into conversation with this young lady on a train journey, and she'd just been all the way down to London for an induction day 6 months after she started with the company. They might have not have bothered.
Indeed, the following day's busy Miller exit interview.
Quite possibly. I think, you know, I think you also have to have a kind of quite a strong "this is how we do things around here" culture. So, you know, we do actually have standards. You do have to have standards, particularly when you're dealing with the public. So, for instance, we used to have quite high standards for uniform and that kind of thing. And, you know, if you're running a call centre, you need to have quite high standards in how people actually speak to customers and that kind of thing, which is a whole different ball game. But you do have to have standards. But then when people actually achieve or surpass the standards, they need to get recognised for it.
Yeah.
And not just taken for granted. And also, if people are not able to meet the standard, then they need to be given support and guidance. But it's not about, you know, whacking people over the head or threatening to sack people. It's about actually helping people and supporting people. And I can remember one guy during that period working for the train company GNER. I was actually responsible for recruitment and training of frontline people for several years. And I remember one guy, he actually got the sack. I had to dismiss him, and he actually said to me, he said, "You've done everything you can to help me. I'd like to thank you very much." Because he had actually taken a lot of time off unnecessarily. He wasn't, you know, he had a lot of stuff going on in his life. But in the end, we had to part company. But I always remember, he said, "Thank you very much for all you've done for me." He said, "No one could have done more."
Perfect. Love it. Right. So some great tips in there to help organisations improve engagement. Some good chat going on in the back channel as well. Ali Godding, one of my co-hosts, is in there today. And
excellent. I know Ali,
yes, logging some of your key quotes, which is wonderful. So going back to employee engagement and customer satisfaction then.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously that's the key part of the show, how this is all working, and sort of, so I understand that there's a link there between employee satisfaction, customer satisfaction, and financial results. We were talking about that. You also mentioned one of the key things seemed to be about this responsibility for customer service. Was that a biggie as well? And did that only work because of the high level of employee engagement?
No, I think it was also driven from the top. And I'll tell you a quick story to illustrate that.
Yeah,
Christopher Garnett, who was the chief executive at the time, he was, you know, I would rate him as the greatest leader that I ever had anything to do with work-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember getting on a train at York one day after having been working in the training centre there. And he was on the platform, and everybody was on first-name terms with him. So I said, "Hello, Christopher, how are you?" He said, "I'm fine." He said, "I'm just going to get on this train," and then he disappeared. I got on the train to go back to where I lived in Peterborough, which is about an hour's journey. And as I always did, I went and talked to the people on the train, the crew, and said, "You know, do you need any help?" And normally they did. Normally, even if I found myself doing some washing up for them or something like that. And I said, "You know what, I'm sure Christopher Garnett just got on the train, but I can't see him anywhere." And after about 5 minutes, he appeared through the train, through the standard class of the train, with two great big bags full of rubbish.
Yeah.
And I looked at him, I said, "Where did you get them from?" He said, "I saw a bunch of school kids get off the train further down at York," he said, "and I realised that there was a likelihood that there would be a lot of rubbish left on the tables. I didn't want the customers that got on at York to have to sit in somebody else's rubbish. I knew there wasn't I knew there wouldn't be a cleaner on the train, so I thought I'd go and do it myself."
Mm-hmm.
And that's he didn't tell somebody else to do it. He went and did it. And that's
brilliant.
The chief executive.
Which really reinforces that point you were making about starting at the top, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So you know, we are we're doing a social media podcast. We know each other mainly through social media, I guess. Twitter, your blog. You're getting more engaged in Google Plus as well now, as are
yes,
the rest of us.
Yeah, very much so.
What, because I suppose when you were doing this back in the 1990s, responsibility for customer service. It's not always going to be this. And in a sense, your example, your story of the chief executive was sort of someone taking responsibility for extending customer service past those people that you might normally see them as supporting. But back in the 1990s, most people, yeah, they had their customers, and that's all sort of pretty much they needed to do. The big change since then, I think, other than the economy and so on, and we discussed how that's made things a little bit more difficult, is the prevalence of social media. All of your customers are out there, and everybody has an increasing chance and opportunity to participate in conversations and help either develop or detract the satisfaction of those customers. How has all of this changed because of social media?
It's changed hugely because anybody can now contact any company, and they can people's reputations can be enhanced or brought down by one tweet, and it's happened with a large supermarket a couple of years ago. I mean, I can't believe that the very big company that I deal with is I'm a customer of. Oh. I know for a fact they have a large number of people purely working on Twitter. Yet when you actually tweet them for some information, all they come back and tell you to do is to ring their helpline. So people haven't got that yet. People haven't actually got the fact that you can. I mean, a large company's reputation can be completely destroyed by a few tweets. And I don't think they've. Most large companies haven't yet got the hang of how to deal with that.
No.
I don't really know one that does it well, to be honest. Although that's not my area of specialism, but I don't know. I can't think of a company that I thought, oh yeah, they're really. There are a couple of railway companies. I think London Midland is a railway company that does it quite well.
Yes. Well, we'll have to get Richard in to talk about that at some point.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. Richard would be a very good person to get in and talk about that. I think they've won awards for their Twitter account. Yeah.
Cool. But yes, apart from that, there's a few US-based companies, but I am struggling to think of any in the UK. I'm sure there are some. Hey, look, so what else? Some wonderful stories based upon your personal experience there, Graham. One of the other things that we try and do in the show is to reflect back on the broader experiences, particularly the latest stuff that's in the press. That's partly just to acknowledge and reinforce and help point people towards some of the incredible resources which are on the engageforsuccess.org site. Every Monday, there's sort of a news summary that goes out with the latest employee engagement post. My one about sourcing and hobbits was on there this week. I'm not quite sure why that was on. As well as the latest news, of course, I was just thinking, things like the Nailing the Evidence report, which of course also deals with the links between employee engagement and customer satisfaction. So you probably know this as well, Graham. Because one of their findings is that companies with top quartile engagement perform score an average of 12% higher in customer advocacy. There is real quantitative evidence to support what we're suggesting.
Yeah.
But also we thought, and we just had a little chat in Google Plus earlier on about this, that it might be worth looking at one of those examples, case studies, articles that was in the news last week, which is this one on Southwest Airlines, which you know, I mean, there's been a lot of stuff out there about Southwest, both in terms of its quirkiness, the high levels of customer satisfaction, the stuff that they're doing with people. But I just thought it was a really nicely worded, argued little summary of sort of how those links have happened. So let me just firstly let our listeners know where they can find this, if they'd like to, and then it might be interesting to know from you whether, you know, I don't know if there's any resonance in that sort of article from what you've been talking about. So firstly, readers. Well, actually, you could be a reader on the Google Plus back channel, but listeners, probably. Simplest way is probably go to engageforsuccess.org, have a look in the news summary, the stuff going out the week commencing the 11th of Feb, and you'll see this little article on employee engagement lessons from Southwest Airlines, or you can go direct to the blog where it's been put up, experiencematters.wordpress.com, and just have a search there, Southwest Airlines, you'll find it fairly quickly. But yeah, Graham, what did you make of that article?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been a sort of fan of Southwest Airlines for a long time, since, well, probably around about the time I'm talking about in the 1990s. They've always had this quirky approach, and I think that's it obviously works for them, and it always has done. But the great thing about them is that they've actually kept it going, because.
Yeah.
A lot of the company that I'm talking about was some of the listeners will have heard of late lamented railway company called GNER, which did actually have a very good reputation for customer service, but then they then lost the franchise. It was taken. It's now on the third lot of owners since then. And to be quite honest with you, you know, things have not stayed the way they were. For various different reasons, that obviously different leadership has taken over. They've had different priorities, but it's interesting because, you know, I always like to refer to Manchester United. Not that I'm a Manchester United fan particularly, but Manchester United always seem to, you know, that once you get the recipe right for something, why do you have to change it? You know, why does some? I mean, Southwest have obviously got the recipe right, and you know, they've kept pretty consistent ever since they started. In fact, EasyJet was originally based on the Southwest business model. But when you get companies that do get it right, and then suddenly they get it spectacularly wrong and continue to do so, that's what frustrates me probably more than anything else. But Southwest are a shining example. I've never flown with them, unfortunately, but you know, I have friends in America that have, and they say that, you know, you know what you're going to get.
You do, don't you? Yeah,
yeah.
I've had that story lots of times. Look, Graham, we've got 2 minutes left, and I do have one more question for you.
Okay.
Because one of the other articles that was in the news summary this week was, of course, one of your own blog posts, where you were talking about the challenges in the UK with employee engagement, and you were talking specifically about the role of the manager needing to provide practical and emotional resources to enable their team to be the best they possibly can be. And we've got a question from Ali in the back channel.
Okay.
We haven't had any callers today, I'm afraid, but we do have this one. Right, and this is, you've got a minute.
Okay.
What would be your advice to managers who are keen to do this, to give their teams that practical and emotional resources to better deliver customer service, but aren't sure where to start? Where do they start? Where do they go?
I think they have to look at all the, you know, managers that want to do that have to look at all their activities and actually see where they are adding value to their frontline people, if they're managing frontline people, where they're adding value to their team, you know, where they are. I think a lot of managers see their role as keeping their manager happy. And I like to turn that on its head and say, you know, your job as a manager is to keep your team happy, which involves providing the practical and emotional resources to enable them to be the best they can possibly be. And so it's just about turning everything on its head, really, and saying, you know, I'm actually here to keep my team motivated and functioning and appreciated.
Brilliant. Wonderful and lovely and nicely succinct as well, so thank you for that. We are out of time. I just want to mention one more thing, which is next week's show. I am going to be hosting that again, so if you've enjoyed today, please do listen in next time. And we are currently going to make that a call-in show. So it's interesting we haven't had any call-ins today. Please do call in next time, or I'll be on my Todd. Next Monday, 4 o'clock GMT. Talk to you then. And thanks, Graham. Brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.